Vorige week zijn we niet op de vroegmarkt geraakt om de heerlijke Belgische noise van Heisa op te halen. Toen verscheen namelijk hun nieuwe plaat, Trois bij Labelman, maar dat maakten we deze week dus goed met Shifting uit dat nieuwe album. Aangezien we nu toch op de vroegmarkt waren, pikten we wel direct de debuutplaat van het Antwerpse post-rock viertal Those Who Didn't op. Maybe Next Year verscheen vandaag. Nadat we eerder al een paar singles draaiden, moesten we dus niet wachten tot volgend jaar op nieuwe muziek, zoals het Act Casually van Those Who Didn't.
Insect van LSD. En dat staat op de Spill EP van de One Man Band van Alice Dixon. Bij de vorige single uit deze EP vroegen we ons af of deze EP alvast in potlood mocht genoteerd worden voor ons eindejaarslijstje. Maar sinds 2 weken kunnen we zeggen dat dat waarschijnlijk wel in orde komt. Het was al een tijdje stil rond de band Danny Blue en The Old Sox, maar ze zijn terug in originele bezetting als kwartet, maar nu met een verkorte naam, namelijk Danny Blue. Muzikaal klinkt het viertal nog altijd melancholisch, 90s grunge en indie, ideaal om bij weg te dromen in het zonnetje. Dit is hun nieuwste single, dit is Somewhere van Danny Blue.
Somewhere out in the forest to behold tide,
Flash and Electronics van Vulture Feather. Het staat op een nieuwe plaat, It Will Be Like Now, die sinds Valentijn uit is bij Felten Records. Vulture Feather zijn veteranen uit de post-hardcore scene uit het noorden van Californië. Met de leeftijd zijn ze hoorbaar wat meer mellow geworden. Bij het volgende nummer worden we onmiddellijk teruggecatapulteerd naar de kille jaren 80. Het geluid van de Nederlandse band Desinteresse is immers onvervalste authentieke jaren 80 Coldwave, inclusief minimaal synths en de one-ups kreten, alleen wordt het nu gemaakt. Dit is hun nieuwe single Silhouette van Desinteresse.
kwam traag op gang, maar hij komt wel binnen. Dit was de nieuwste single van Vagen Voorproever voor hun nieuwe gelijknamige EP Rauw. Vorige week speelden ze nog in het voorprogramma van hun maatjes van Amen Ra in de AB. En hun eerstvolgende show is in Nijmegen op 3 mei op het DIY Fest. En de dag erna spelen ze in Brussel in de Cobra Zone. En van Kortrijkse punk naar punk uit Melbourne. Het is een kleine stap voor ons. Geen idee trouwens hoe vaak de naam Mikey Young bij ons al is gevallen. Maar deze week is het dus ook weer gelukt. Hij deed namelijk de mastering van Serious Acts. En dat is de nieuwe plaat van het trio Clam. En wat we ook zeker weten is dat dit het tweede nummer op die plaat zal zijn. No ID van Clam.
Feels strange, a part of a world that's unable to change.
Primitive Ring. Dit was een scheve portie garage rock meets psychedelica van het trio. Dit gevaarlijke pakje muziek is de tweede single die ze een maand geleden uitbrachten via Indirect. Dit was Poisonous Gift. En als Primitive Ring scheef is, wat moeten we dan zeggen van Yahweh Nilgun? De scheve freak-out noise van het kwartet uit de rauwe buurt van New York is hier de laatste maanden al wel vaker voorbijgekomen. En terecht, want de nieuwe album 54 Pounds is een bezwerende trip. Dit komt eruit, Blackout van Yahweh Nilgun.
Thank you. talking haunted. I drink and talk in script. Woven bones, wish granted. The life you knew, the life you knew. Too long. Thoughtful, unsound the bell.
Talking Haunted, de openingstrak van Wish Defense, van onze huisfavoriete Fax, en daarover gesproken.
Hi, this is Brian from Fax, and you can hear an interview with me next Friday on Radio Scorpio 106 FM.
Ja, dat hoorde je goed. Volgende week vrijdag is er een Signaalruis XL. Afgelopen week hadden we een lang gesprek met Brian Case, de frontman van Fax, en daarvoor ook al van minstens even coole bands, Disappears en 90 Day Man. Hij had zoveel te vertellen over die bands en een aantal van zijn favoriete platen, dat we uitzonderlijk een uitzending van 2 uur zullen hebben. Volgende week vrijdag dus vanaf 8 uur op Radio Scorpio. Nu al iets om naar uit te kijken. Dadelijk is er sterrenplaten. Wij gaan eruit met nieuw werk van Prolapse. Nieuwe plaatjes draaien weer natuurlijk vaker, maar dit plaatje komt niet van een roedel jonge wolven. Het uit Leicester afkomstige Prolapse vergaarde tussen 92 en 2000 een klein beetje bekendheid met hun mix van postpunk, krautrock en shoegaze. 25 jaar later komt er zowaar een nieuwe plaat en dit is de voorloper daarvan. On the Quarter Days. Tot volgende week dus voor ons lange gesprek met Brian Case.
and welcome to Worlds Apart. Sound mind and good instincts have always been must-have qualities for those seeking and wielding power. But the definition of good or even effective politics is much harder to formulate. With Russia and the West now trading accusations of irrationality and even madness over their stances in Ukraine, is there still any common ground to be reached? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Henry Sardarian, Dean of the School of Governance and Politics at the Moscow State Institute of International Relations. Mr. Sardarian, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your invitation.
Now, the launch of the Russian military operation in Ukraine came as a surprise, not only to many in the West, but I also think to many in Russia, including myself. It is true that Ukraine over the last couple of years was increasingly being militarized. It is true that it presented an objective security challenge for Russia. But did you personally believe that this issue, this problem will be addressed in such a way?
I mean, sooner or later, it should have been done in this way, because Russia, during not only these 8 years, but even before, Russia has always signalized the threats and the problems which Russia faces in its relations with the Western countries, with NATO, with each of the NATO member states alone, because the threats to the Russian security were never taken into account. And moreover, I guess the main target and the main goal of the NATO during the last years was to pose a threat to Russia. So Russia has proposed several times a resolution to this problem in a way Russia sees it. But unfortunately, we have heard that it's not going to happen, and we've heard only the language of ultimatums. So I think it was predictable that sooner or later it's going to happen like this.
I asked this question of many of my guests, and I want to run it by you as well. Do you think this boldness, this brazenness with which Ukraine was militarized recently, as well as with which Ukraine openly pursued anti-Russian policies and politics, do you think it was, in fact, based on the calculation that no matter what, Russia may grumble as much as it wants, but it would never ever use military force against Ukraine for a whole host of strategic, cultural, emotional, psychological, as well as kinship reasons?
No, I guess it was done keeping in mind that Ukraine is going to be the one to start aggression, another one against the Donbas, people who live in Donbas region, and then maybe against Russia as well. So the target was that we should militarize Ukraine, and the target number one would be to bring Russia into this conflict and make this conflict as long as possible. And you can see this by looking at the types of the weapons which are provided to Ukraine. They are their attitude towards Ukrainians is something which reminds me of the way they work with the Taliban movement or with any other. They just supply them with weapons which are necessary for partisan war, for a very long and very very demolishing for any country and its economy and its population war. And they have no other target there. Mm-hmm. They use Ukraine as a territory which should be a kind of infinite threat to Russia's security.
One of your colleagues, Andrei Shushentsov, said before the start of this operation that the key problem of Russia's foreign policy was, as he put it, the low feasibility of threats. In other words, that Russia was drawing its red lines, it was signaling its discomfort with NATO's policies, but essentially, decision makers in the West didn't believe that Russia would do anything kinetic in response to that. Do you agree with that? And if so, whose fault was that? Moscow's or the West, that the Kremlin's repeated warnings not taken seriously?
First of all, the Western countries got used to the fact that Russia is the country which has lost in the Cold War, and that was the main attitude towards Russia for this 20, 30 years. However, the world has changed in these 30 years, and the Russian government has stressed for many times that there are some territories which present strategic importance for Russian Federation, and it's not going to be possible to work with those countries to make them become parts of some international unions or political or economic or military without taking into account the position of Russian Federation. Maybe up to this moment, they thought that we are going to stress the importance of some points, but we are not going to act in the most decisive way. However, I think now no one has any doubts that Russia is very serious when it comes to the red lines for its security.
Mm-hmm. But to some extent, Mr. Sardarian, this perception has turned into its exact opposite, because when you look at how this conflict is covered in Western media, Russia is intentionally being turned into a pariah, and Putin is presented as a murderous psychopath. This tendency to apply a psychopathological framework for what is essentially a foreign policy analysis, do you think that's a manipulation, or is the West indeed fully ignorant of structural precursors to this crisis?
If we talk about the political elite of the Western countries, they are fully aware of all the problems which we have for the moment. But the things you have mentioned, I guess they are mainly used for the inner politics and for a kind of a pressure for the civil society of the countries which are now targeting Russian economy and which are also developing some aggressive measures against the Russian Federation, because you should be able to explain your population why they are going to suffer in the coming winter, why everything is going to be twice or even triple more expensive than it used to be several months ago. You should make them believe that this is the price they pay for fighting something terrible and something very dangerous for themselves as well. So that's why they are trying to present Russia in this way, because what the United States do at this moment is they keep destroying the perspectives and the future of the European economy, because for the United States, their relations with Russia are much less important than for the European Union, because the difference is almost 10 times. Well, our trade balance with the United States is around $30 billion. With the European Union, it's more than $230 billion. So a huge difference here. And that's why it's very difficult to explain to any German or Italian or any French or, I don't know, Dutch citizen of the European Union, why are you going to live in a terrible way in the coming months? Why are you going to pay much more for very regular products which you are very used to, in case you tell them the truth? Because the truth is that 8 years ago the Ukrainian government has started a war against Donbas, and now Russian Federation tries to end it with this special operation. In this case, it is not it's not possible to explain all these things to your citizens. But if you present Russia as a terrible country and its president as someone who does terrible things, etc., then it gets much easier.
Now, let me ask you about the reality check that will also have to happen on the Russian side. Given the sheer scale of the challenges that Russia took upon itself, and I don't only mean the military operation and the Western sanctions it provoked, but also I think our country bears national responsibility for rebuilding the infrastructure and, you know, creating at least a modicum of governance in the Ukrainian territories now under Russia's control. Do you find all that burden that Russia took upon itself realistic? Do you think it can bear it? And how long do you think it will take? And how much do you think it will take away from Russia's own development?
Okay, well, I think to answer this question, I really have to answer another one as well. I've told for many times in different interviews that the special operation might be in Ukraine. However, the war is against the West